Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is March 13th, 2015. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. A few weeks ago, Susan facilitated an all-day workshop focusing on parent-child relationships. Now, if you're listening today, these relationships do have an influence on your life. You may not be a parent, but we've all had parents, and this relationship constitutes the first and maybe one of the most pivotal, special relationships that we have in this Earth curriculum. Susan's workshop was candid and on point, and she has agreed to share some of the more salient points with us this morning. While you're listening to the show, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and on the left side of the page, click the chat button. You will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. And if you're not already a member, just hit the join button and come on in. So my guest today is Susan. Many of you know her if you listen to the show. She is an author of two books based on A Course in Miracles and her experiences. The first is Extraordinary, Ordinary Forgiveness, and the second is Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. She is a co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she also facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you, CA. It's wonderful to be here, as always.
Well, it's great to hear you, and looking forward to this. You know, I was in the workshop with you several weeks ago, and so I pulled out my notebook, and I thought, okay, I'm going to look through, and I'm going to find five or six of the points that I think are really important, and we can kind of go from there, and I'll see, you know, what Susan thought were some of the most important points. But I have to admit this to you. It's so funny. When I went back through my notebook, I have 28 pages of notes. And so I went, oh, you know, so I was going, okay, this is good, this is good, this is good, this is good. And then what I found is even on my computer screen, I'd already filled two pages of what I thought, these are the most salient points.
Just, okay. That's great. Well, it's such a rich topic, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. And there certainly were some things that I think were, I'm not going to say things that maybe I'd never heard, but oh, I so needed to be reminded of those things. And I will bring those up during our discussion. But I want you to know, I can attend a lot of workshops and never take a note. And maybe that's just because, you know, the speaker is saying things and I go, okay, yeah, I know that. Or, yeah, that's something in my consciousness. But with yours, I was just like scribbling the whole time. And like I said, when I went back over these notes, I couldn't believe there were 28 pages of notes
there. I can't believe that either.
I'm surprised I didn't run out of paper.
Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny, though. I sort of understand, because anything that came through that was truth from this is from the course itself, but really from Ken's teachings, because, you know, actually preparing to give the workshop was a little bit of a journey itself for me, because I had read Ken's wonderful little books on from a workshop that he did, Parents and Children, Our Most Difficult Classroom, about 10 years ago, I'm not sure. But, and it was, you know, it's just so powerful. But then I bought the CD set last time that I was at the foundation in Temecula. And so, to, you know, my preparation for the workshop was really to, you know, just go into my own experience with both my daughter and my parents, my aging parents at this point, and then really immerse myself in Ken's teaching on this. So it was kind of that combined, you know, how does this apply in my life? How does this apply in our lives? And then really listening to Ken, who, you know, I mean, you know, he's just, you know, I think I probably could have taken 28 notes on that. But since I listened to most of it on the treadmill, it was hard for me to do that. But so it was just really, you know, it is such a rich topic, because the parent-child relationship is really, you know, it is the template for the special relationship, what the course calls the special relationship. It's our first and, you know, it's our earliest and longest experience with the special relationship. It is our, you know, it sets up kind of the whole way we, as you said, relate to each other in this world. And it comes from the whole you know, the substitute, which a special relationship is a substitute for God's love, you know, believing that we threw it away. So it's a substitute for the dependency that we had on, you know, that we believed we had on God, you know, and wanted to strike off on our own and have our own declaration of independence and go off into this imaginary world of, you know, a personal self and selves and form. And so it's really that kind of, you know, it's where we first learn and reinforce that acting out of the ego thought system. And which is all about differences and unequal, you know, everybody here is in form is unequal. And that starts with our parents mm-hmm. and as these very dependent babies, seemingly so innocent, but it just sets up the whole idea. You know, we're not aware, we've forgotten we made this whole agenda up. And so we're immediately, you know, we come in with full-blown egos immediately out to prove that we do exist apart from God, but it's not our fault, it's our parents. And then that just sets the whole bowl of seeming wax going, you know?
Right. And you know what you've touched upon, or I'm going to bring this up right away, because this is, I guess, one of the points that I really took home from it, is when you think on a psychological level, or even maybe it's sociology, I don't know where it falls, but we live our whole lives, in a sense, trying to become adults. And yet, for many of us, whatever role we had in the family, like, for instance, if we have younger brothers and sisters, older brothers and sisters, it's almost impossible to somehow get out of that role, you know, just that inequality. And it doesn't matter if we're 40 or 50 or 16, somehow the older sister is always the older sister. And the parents are sort of the same way. I think we really struggle, and because we can be adults, but there's some level at which we still accept that there are parents and or we act like children. And one of the things you said at the very beginning of the workshop that just, boom, just hit me, was that the Course really offers us the opportunity to grow up and to become spiritual adults.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
You know, and I just, like I said, that really hit me. And throughout the workshop, you really reinforced that idea that, you know, and at one point you even said something about we're never really grown up until we can get to that point that we accept we are not the result of other people's choices or decisions, that our self-worth is not dependent on whether or not people loved us or if they didn't love us or what they did or what they didn't do or any decisions that they made, that our lives, our self-worth is not dependent on that. And to really grow up is to move beyond literally playing victim to those kinds of things in our lives.
Absolutely. I mean, ultimately, our self-worth comes from God. We believe we've disowned, but we aren't really, we're not grown-ups in, you know, here in the seeming dream, or spiritually, of course, until we're willing to recognize that nothing, you know, nothing and no one outside my mind has the power to take my peace away. And what happened 30, 40 years ago is not the reason that I'm having trouble today, you know, feeling good about myself or accomplishing what I need to accomplish, or all the things that we point to the past and point to figures in our dream, primarily our parents, and then later our children, actually. You know, we point to our children are not okay, so we're not okay, you know?
Right.
And it's not true. You know, that's a choice that we're, a present choice that we're making to remain children and to remain in this, you know, seemingly learned helplessness that, you know, that's really just completely a mistaken choice. And based on a mistaken belief that we're inherently, you know, unequal and helpless victims of God casting us out, which was, you know, just a story that we made up as a defense against the idea that we cast ourselves out of heaven, you know, and mm-hmm. threw God's love away. So we're acting this out at such a very deep level. And that was one of the things that really, you know, I think I needed so much to hear, was because I've become aware as in, you know, more in more recent years, both with my daughter, of how dependent I have been on her love. You know, that's the special relationship. And as she's becoming, and it's really, I mean, there's been so much healing and you know, true forgiveness in my mind about this relationship with her. that has been such a teaching and a journey. But she's at a point right now where she's leaving. You know, she'll be graduating from college soon, and wants to, you know, strike off and move out of state and go on her own, and she's in, which is great. But, you know, there's all those feelings of, you know, what about my role? You know, what does that mean for me? And again, it's all about me, you know, this meanness, this neediness that we have in our relationships. And then alternatively, you know, we're all still children. And as our parents age, and I've become very acutely aware of this in with my parents since my dad had a stroke a year and a half ago, you know, what I thought was a pretty stable relationship was really, you know, not so much. I still was holding on to a lot of unconscious grievances and pointing a finger at, you know, as we all do, at the way my needs were not met in the past and why that makes me, you know, sort of quote unquote damaged today in these certain areas, you know.
Right. Well, and you know, it goes back to what some people say, but you certainly brought it out in the workshop, which is, what is our story? We're very, very tied to our story. I am the way I am because of this, that, and the other thing. And what am I if I'm not my story? What would happen if I let go of my story?
Right. And the truth is, we don't know. And, you know, until we do.
Yes.
But the idea, you know, again, that our self-worth comes from God. This is everything that we're, that this personal self that I've identified with is a defense against the truth. All of the people that, you know, that the dream that I have dreamt up and peopled my dream landscape with all these, you know, major and minor players is all, you know, this is something that I cooked up, and it had a purpose, and it has a purpose as long as I choose to give it purpose, you know, give it the purpose of proving again the dream real, proving the exile from the flight from love real and the alternate reality real. And so, you know, I have a chance in any given moment to learn to grow up by choosing a different teacher who knows that this is not the case and knows that our self-worth comes from God and knows that that nothing outside me, again, has the power to take my peace away. And, you know, and that's the real healing that is available to us in every moment, is to say, what does this have to do with me right now? You know,
mm-hmm.
Either fearful with our children and the, you know, we look to the past, we're nostalgic, we feel lost, or we look to the future and we feel loss and we feel fear. Or with our parents, you know, again, we're unconsciously so often pointing a finger and holding on to resentments about how we didn't get our needs met. And it's true that in form, there are, you know, there's a whole hierarchy of illusions of ways in which people didn't get their needs met or were actively, you know, seemingly abused. But what has that got to do with me now, you know? And I do have a choice here about whether I want to make the purpose of this relationship healing my mind and growing into the awareness that my parents, I mean, ultimately, through this practice, that my parents, no matter what seemed to have happened, you know, no parent can meet all this neediness that is a setup in this dream, and that ultimately, you know, they had their problems too. They had their own issues, and you know, they are brothers and sisters here who are trying to find their way home, just like I am, just like everybody else here. There is no difference between victims and victimizers. That's the ego's story, you know.
Yes.
So,
for sure.
So we have the opportunity to claim that, you know, the healing of my own mind. I mean, that's what offers healing when the Course talks about, you know, healing the world, healing the sonship, you know, and leading our brothers out of the dream, and all of those kinds of references are not literal. They're about paying attention to you know, self, the imaginary self that I'm identifying with, and you know, recognizing that one way, that the way that I'm the teacher I've chosen, the ego's path of victims and victimizers, is bringing me all of my suffering, and I have another teacher in which I can learn to let this go.
all the time. And you had mentioned before the word purpose, which is one of my very favorite words. Mm-hmm. As an astrologer, it's very Saturn, but purpose, because we choose the purpose. And so the relationships in our lives, if we're really going to be conscious, we can look at it and say, what is the purpose of this relationship? And we can change the purpose. And the purpose can be one to have peace of mind and forgiveness rather than to continue to, I don't know, terrify each other.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the course is, all things are the workbook lesson, all things are lessons God would have me learn. God isn't giving me the lessons, but you know, in what the course is saying about that is every moment is an opportunity to heal my mind about this hallucination I'm having, you know, and experience the peace that I'm craving and think I is no longer available. That glimpse of the home I think I destroyed, you know, that sense of innocence and eternally, and you know, our true nature as eternally loved and loving, that none of us here feels we are. I mean, we're you know, we are so fraught with conflict within, so fraught with guilt without knowing the cause of it, trying to point an external finger to this nagging guilt that's at us all the time if we're honest with ourselves. You know, there's something very not right and rotten at the core of this, of what's playing out in our mind. I mean, even if we just really begin to look within, which the course gets us to do. So, you know, we have a chance. The parent-child relationship offers that, I think, the most, you know, the best chance in some ways of really healing what's at the core of this thought system, because it plays out in every seemingly unequal relationship in which we engage, which is rampant in the world. You know, we're either a boss or an employee, or we're in some position of authority, or we're in some position of seeming, you know, subservience. And so we have an opportunity, if we begin with these, you know, these relationships that are right in our face and at the core of our story, to you know, to allow this to, through practice, to begin to generalize to all our relationships.
Yes. And you're right. I mean, what relationship is equal? We always want that, or we're always saying that we do that in our relationships. We're creating some kind of balance. And I suppose we do keep some kind of balance, but it's more like a teeter-totter.
Absolutely.
You know, it swings from one side to the other.
Right. I think Ken has even used that image, because it is, yes, it's us or them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, I mean, you know, we think, well, you know, I mean, I don't know what would happen if you know, this really happened to me with my parents. And I think that I can't be okay if I let it go, you know, because again, it's us or them. If they're innocent, then I'm guilty.
Right.
You know, and so if I'm guilty, then they're innocent. And so, you know, I don't know, within the ego thought system, there's no way off of that completely unstable teeter totter. But, you know, the thing to do in a desert is leave, jump the hell off the teeter totter. And we have a teacher that's, you know, whose hand we can take. We don't have to jump and hurl ourselves, but we can gently stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm thinking about several things that have come up recently where, you know, I just think we have this little box in our minds, or, you know, whatever, we just treasure the things that we feel like have been done wrong. And that it's like, we're always waiting for somebody to come back and apologize. We're waiting to balance. That's the teeter totter too, that we're waiting to balance, is somehow I'm going to get that person to realize what they did. Somehow I'm going to get that apology, and that's going to fix me when that person finally realizes they done me wrong, you know, that kind of thing. And in fact, I was listening to some news, you know how I am with that, Susan, I go back and forth with that, but I thought it was really interesting because somebody said, and he was talking about the world perspective and specifically, you know, some of the things that are going on in the world. And he said, well, one thing it would be good to realize is, he said, everybody thinks they're the good guys.
Right.
And I thought, see, that to me was perfect, because I think on an individual level, I felt that for a long time. I mean, it took me a while to get there, but I finally realized people don't, most of the time, they may have internal guilt, but for the most part, we always justify what we did. There was a good reason we did it, and we're the good guys. And that for the most part, even a group of people that are doing something that we label as terror, they believe they're the good guys. They think they are stamping out oppression or ungodliness in the world.
Right, absolutely. It's everyone's anger feels justified because they believe that they were victimized somehow. And about righteous wars. I mean, my God, look at history of all of the wars that have been waged in the name of both freedom and largely religious freedom, in the name of God. Which is absurd, but it's all based on this idea again that while we constantly are trying to terrorize others as a result of how victimized we feel, the truth is that that our attraction to that victimization, I mean, the biggest victim wins, and somebody as you know, in this world, it switches back and forth from victim to victimizer with astonishing speed. And so it's a kind of a secret race to the finish of who gets to be the biggest victim. That's what we're not aware of. As you said, the gleam of guilt, the course talks about,
the gleam of guilt.
We're so attracted to this. It's like it's our personal treasure box, but the Pandora's box. Well, it's really what we treasure. It's, the Course says, what we hug close, and so we're not aware that we're just hardwired, robotically attracted to this. But that's a lie too. That's again about the body, and so while we're very, very resistant to looking at this a different way, we still nonetheless have a spark of sanity within our mind that will help us do that when we get tired of playing this game. And what tires us finally is the pain of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, going back to the parent-child relationship, the opportunity for many of us as we become, older and our parents are aging and so forth, is, as we all know, the roles in that relationship begin to shift. And so anything unhealed, we have a second opportunity to really look at and begin to see, because our parents will become more and more childlike if we're, if they're still around and we're engaged in any way with them. And we may be required and very often are required to become in some way their caretakers. So anything unhealed that's opposing, as Course students, that's opposing our return to truth will begin to arise for us to look at. And so we can use that relationship and the challenging interactions that will result from that relationship to heal our mind about this belief in inherent inequality. And again, to see that our parents, despite the roles, now my mom or dad may be playing the role of child and even bratty child that I've played, but that doesn't change God's love for them, and it doesn't need to have to change mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing that I was thinking that really hit me when you talked about it in the workshop is, because once again, every time I'm challenged that just maybe I don't know the truth or just maybe I don't know the right way, that's where I feel my stubbornness, all my resistance. But what if I really am wrong about this? You said we don't know our own best interests. And the Course tells us that. Right. We don't have the faintest idea what our own best interest is. So if we don't know our own, how could we know somebody else's?
Absolutely.
And that hit me because, that's what we really do in so many of these relationships, and especially with the parent, the parental one, or if we have kids, is that I know best. I know better than you. And I know what you should do or what you should have done, etc. And so all of a sudden, when you back it up and go, well, if you don't know your own best interests, how would you know theirs? I was like, oh, okay, I don't have any ground to stand on here, do I?
Well, and that's totally true. And we, as parents, we're so identified and invested in our, you know, our children complying with our wishes. And, you know, we live through our children. We believe that they're reflections on us, and we want them to do all the right things as we see it, and to get good grades, and to, you know, basically comply with with society's rules and goals and so forth. And the Course isn't saying that we don't still, you know, that we still need to honor our roles, but we also, as you said, we don't know anyone else's atonement path. We don't even know our own. And, you know, children come in with their own paths and their own, you know, this is their dream, and they know what is in their own best interest. And maybe the most, the most healing thing ultimately, because we can't see we don't have the Holy Spirit's perspective, but in the whole spectrum of our return to love, maybe, you know, they need to learn some hard lessons this time around to come to that place where they're willing to choose again. Again, it's you know, pain that usually motivates us. So to be open and with our children to again, looking at this relationship is not about me fixing, changing, manipulating my child to do what I want them to do, because that's teaching the lessons of the ego. This relationship is about healing my mind. I'm responsible for demonstrating to my child, and thereby empowering my child, and my parent for that matter, you know, that demonstrating to them the power of our shared decision-making mind by not having, you know, not allowing anything that they do or don't do to change my love for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll tell you what is occurring to me. One of the things that you did that I really appreciated too is you kind of distilled the process of forgiveness down into at least what I put it down as three steps. And I think about this because so often once you even open up this Pandora's box of relationships or parental stuff or once again my story, you know, what comes to me is how could I ever forgive that? How could that ever happen? And so what you had specifically said is remind yourself, I'm never upset for the reason I think, which is lesson number 5. And then I could see peace instead of this, which is lesson number 34. But then even more importantly is to ask for help, ask for the inner, you know, what Bruce Rawls calls the inner kindness teacher. Please help me see this differently. But the visual I kind of had on it is, you know, there again, sometimes that's hard for me to understand. Well, you know, how do you just hand it over and somehow it's magically going to be forgiven? But, you know, I was kind of thinking today when I was reading through these notes, and I always get these visuals. Well, it was sort of like, well, you mix up, some brownies or you mix up a cake, but you have to turn it over to the oven. You know, eventually you do your part, but then you put it in the oven and you let the process happen. And that's not a piece that you can do. You know, you just have to trust that process. You just have to present it. You have to be conscious and put it out there. And then the cake bakes and you enjoy it. And maybe in a sense, even though I don't understand and I want to exactly how that forgiveness process happens, in very many ways, I have had that experience of just when I finally say, please help me see this differently, I do.
That's, yeah, exactly. And again, you know, well, often we don't know how the, you know, we're always looking to form as evidence of inner healing.
Right.
So we think it's going to be, you know, a good batch of brownies. Mm-hmm. but you know, it's really returning to peace. And so you know, that process that you mentioned of I'm not upset for the reason I think, I could see peace instead of this. That's what Ken was emphasizing a lot in the last few years. And you know, please help me to see this differently. That step again is really kind of taken for us, but it's the resigning again as our own teacher. It's just saying, you know, I could see peace instead of this, but there's a part of me that doesn't want to see peace. So
yeah,
you help me, please. You know, you meaning as long as we think that we're a you know, body, we're speaking as if this is a body too, but it's really this part of our mind, and saying, would you help us, you know, see this with the way you see it, meaning the way you experience it. And so, you know, when we do that, there, we may experience a shift immediately, but very often, and the more I work with the course, I don't. There's that process of trust and waiting, and because more and more resistance rises to the surface. Again, mm-hmm. ego becomes very, what am I if I don't have my story? The unraveling of this is very threatening. And so to be able to say, I'm not feeling peace right now, but you are still there. I talked a lot in the workshop and talk in general a lot about really cultivating that relationship with Jesus as our teacher. And that means very much of the time going on faith. And, I try to really kind of start my day with that. I want to see everything and everyone the way you see them, the way you experience it, including the self that I think I am. Because so often we're so hard on ourselves with this, when we run up against our resistance and realize that I'm experiencing this because I'm choosing it, but I feel paralyzed to choose again. I can't seem to shift out of it. And So just being able to say, please help me to see this differently, whatever words you want to use, that you remember the presence, that loving presence for you. You remember how close Jesus is really to us because he is a part of our mind, and that the love is still there, that, we cannot ever be abandoned. That love is unconditional. And to just kind of ride it out and trust that it will return when my fear subsides. That's part of the process too. And just checking in throughout our day, recognizing any time that I'm wanting to point a finger at something for why I don't feel okay right now is really coming from a very fearful, childish state, a part of me that doesn't want to grow up to the truth because it's afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't know there is another truth. It's afraid to go back to the scene of the crime. So, it's doing, so there's no need to judge it. So it really is just, it's working with, again, changing of my relationship with my child, my mom, my boss, my employee, my spouse, all of our relationships to healing my mind about this, this poor little lost child. But I can't fight that. I have to allow that presence of love to be there so that the child will feel safe to follow Jesus, that isn't done for us. That just is there. And there's times when we won't feel it, but feelings lie.
Well, and Susan, something I was thinking about too, that you just touched upon, that it's one of those things in life, I think, at least personally, it makes me feel icky. I don't want to admit it, but that we have such resistance to peace. We have a resistance to the conflict going away. And what I'm thinking is that on some level, whether it's really conscious or it's not conscious, we kind of revel in believing that you hurt me and now look at how pained I am. We do it in all kinds of ways in our lives. And I'm trying to think whether it's in the text or whether it's in the lessons. But, when we have that lesson of give me your blessing, Holy Son of God, it's really the opposite of that. See, look what you've done to me. You have caused me pain. And it's almost like I do think sometimes we have a psychological and in this case, maybe spiritual investment in saying, see, if you hadn't done this, I wouldn't be this way. And I want you to look at me because you've made me this way. And it's almost like we don't want to give that up. We don't want to give up that kind of leverage that we have over another person to try to make them feel guilty. I guess that's what I'd call it.
Right. And it's all a mask for the finger that we're pointing at God.
Right.
What you did to me. Look at the sorry shape I'm in because you cast me out of heaven, And so really, we've turned it all around, and that's why we're trying to say that we're innocent. I didn't really do this. This is all a mask over that secret belief that we really did run away from home. And, we're trying to turn the tables on God. And so, yes, in our relationships, that's what, where there is this tremendous resistance. And with our parents, especially, we really don't. I mean, it's very, very threatening I was joking in the class about it was a very small group because this is a really threatening topic to people.
Yes. Well, and I told you that beforehand. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go.
Right. And a lot of people told me that. And so, you know, because it, really precisely because of its potential for healing, you know, again, you know, give me your blessing, Holy Son of God. If we turn the purpose of our relationship with our parents and children around to healing our mind, what does that mean for me? And that's always at the bottom of our secret fear of, you know, again, we don't know through the ego's brain, our the alternative, that there still is an alternative. And so we're, you know, we're very, very deeply at a level so much deeper than we're aware of, threatened by this, that, we can't do this alone. We have to have a teacher. You know, I think I called it an inner therapist in the workshop, really, that is, you know, not agreeing, not in the way of analyzing what's going on, but that sane part of our mind that knows, you know, that we're safe, that knows that everyone here is innocent, you know, and that the hard battle that we're all fighting is all coming from the same fearful place, and yet can be healed in a, you know, in a holy instant in which we choose to change the purpose of the relationship and ask to see things differently. And again, that healing is happening whether or not we're experiencing it right now or not. That's part of the trust that this course calls for. And Jesus assures us throughout the, you know, throughout the text, throughout the workbook and the pamphlets, that we can't fail at this. You know, the truth is we're already home. We're still all cradled in God's love. And, you know, we will choose spiritual maturity when the fear subsides, because it will lead us to everything we want. You know, and he gives us the model of, you know, if we follow him and we choose him as our teacher and continually take his hand and you know, really own the idea of you know, making this relationship about healing my mind, that everything here is a call for love that I think I lost, then that will, you know, that is what's going to lead us back up the ladder to, you know, that we believe that separation let us down.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's going through my mind is, yeah, why wait for heaven?
Why wait?
Why wait for our happiness? Why wait for our peace of mind? It's already a done deal. It's a journey we've already taken, and we just continue to pretend that it's not true. It kind of goes back to when I read the course, one of my first visuals was all of a sudden I realized that, or this is how it felt to me. I thought everybody's sitting in the bar of a restaurant enjoying themselves and drinking, and they're all waiting for me to show up so we can come sit, you know, come sit down at our table and have a great meal. And there's nothing to stop me, but it's like they're all waiting and they're not judging me. They're just going, come on, CA, you can do it. Wake up, come join us, you know? And it's like, yeah, why wait? Why wait for happiness? You know, why do we keep just going through these little games in our minds? Why not just wake up and go join the party?
Well, we keep seeking for ourselves where we can never be found as long as it still works on some level. You know, I mean, it never works, but as long as we're getting some kind of charge out of it and you know, are able to deny the pain that we're in, then you know, we keep doing it. But at some point, the course says that just becomes too much, you know, and we recognize. And I think in terms of our development here, one of the crucial places in which we can really get in touch with how painful this is when we get to the point where, you know, we recognize that we're still holding these grievances for our parents as they begin to age and as we begin to age. And, you know, do I really want to keep doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and in the parent-child relationship, as our children leave and go on with their lives, and we recognize whatever is unhealed in that relationship or our own dependency, as I mentioned earlier, on that relationship to, you know, who would I be without my role as mom here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we begin to see that we have a choice about this, and you know, it's now we have a different informed relationship with our children, and we can you know, we can be truly loving and, you know, let go of the inequality in this relationship and, you know, because we're no longer responsible in form for, you know, for the basic developmental things and learning how to take care of your body and all of that, that we really are in form as parents. Those are, that is a role that we need to, you know, do when we're a parent. Uh-huh. But we grow, that becomes, there's increasing levels of independence from our children. And finally, there's a point where, you know, we can be truly look at them, you know, as equals. And again, we can do that with our parents too. We don't have to be stuck in this, on this teeter totter of dependency with our parents and, you know, our dependency on getting them to acknowledge what they did to us, which a lot of people have that. You know, we all want a big apology from our parents or something.
Right. You call it the sorry saga of Susan.
Yeah. You know, and of course everybody has this, it's in one form or another. And so, you know, that I mean, the truth is that nobody did this to me. You know, I'm choosing again to, and Ken made the point in his workshop that I thought was really a good one. And that is that, you know, this is also, we have very selective, a viewpoint of what we want to hold on to and not hold on to. And mostly what we want to hold on to is our memories that hurt, you know, and where our needs were not met. And you know, that's what we cling to. That's what we hug close. But, you know, there were probably many other times that our parents were kind to us. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but again, so it's there's a purpose. There's a method to our madness. And you know, again, it's all set up to try to disown this secret guilt we feel in our mind over believing that we, you know, we wronged God. And you know, so we're constantly trying to turn that around. And the first place that we get to point the finger is at our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, something you were saying earlier too that I was thinking about is this really the other, when we were talking about this being a threatening, so you know, the parent-child relationship and applying forgiveness in it being so threatening to the ego. It's very, I mean, it goes against all the psychological teaching. At least in my lifetime, which has always been about, you know, again, really reinforces this idea that we're the way we are today because of our relationship with our parents and you know, how they did or did not meet those needs.
Yes.
You know, and whether or not we were given healthy egos from mm-hmm. The idea of a healthy ego is you know,
it's pretty kind of an oxymoron in this situation, isn't it?
So again, you know, although there seemed to be a hierarchy of illusions in how our needs were not met or whatever happened to us as children, that's a setup, that's a lie. And, you know, we are not, our parents are not responsible for who we are today. And you know, we are not responsible for who our children are today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet we are responsible for our perceptions, and we're responsible for kind of turning off the sorry saga of Susan
right.
and just laughing at it. As Ken would say, don't take it so seriously.
Right.
And just saying, you know, why don't, you know, am I willing to choose something that's going to feel good to me? And I mean, and along those lines, another thing you talked about several different times during the workshop was, you know, strengthening the relationship with the inner teacher, strengthening the relationship with God or Jesus or the Holy Spirit. And you think so much about that because every choice we make, every single time we, you know, whether even it's, if it's in our life, you know, we're strengthening our muscles or we're weakening them, or we're making good food choices or we're choosing not to have healthy choices, you know, and what are you strengthening in your life? What are you feeding? What are you nurturing? And so which relationship are you strengthening? And what are you getting out of it? And so in every single moment, we can strengthen the bond or the relationship that we have with our inner teacher.
Absolutely. And that's what Jesus is asking us to do throughout the course. You know, I'm here for you. You know, I know that you're challenged, and I know that you, you know, are suffering from these hallucinations, but I can, you know, I'm still here. I'm still, you know, you are still a part of me, and I will teach you that in every moment, if you will but choose me and remember me, you know, and our invitation to remember Jesus is when we're feeling that terrible guilt, that terrible loss, that terrible anger that we feel in our relationships. You know, that's when we need to turn to Jesus and say, I don't want this anymore. Help me.
Yes, help me. I mean, and that's it. Just help me. That's all we have to say.
Right. I mean, it's not about helping me inform. It's about helping me with the way I'm seeing this and experiencing this, because I want to experience it the way you experience it. And I do think that crucial to be able to see others as Jesus experiences them is to be able to ask to see ourselves as Jesus experiences them, because we need to have. You know, we can't give what we don't have, and if we're feeling a tremendous lack of love, which is the only reason that we would be projecting it outward, and believing that it's the cause of it outside me, it's because of what my parents did, it's because of my child leaving, you know, or my child not doing well in school, or my child acting out, or whatever, you know. We need Jesus as our teacher at our side to help us see that cause. But we also have to see that we're not the cause either, because again, it's this teeter totter with the ego thought system of, if we withdraw the projection from outside ourselves, then it must mean that I'm empty. And
yes.
The only way out of that thought system is to take the hand of the part of our mind that knows that that's a lie.
Yes. And on that note, we need to start wrapping up.
Okay.
So what I would ask you, if you have a final thought, you can go ahead and say that, or if you have any announcements that you'd like to make today before we close the show.
Okay, well, you know, my only final thought would be that just, you know, I think this is such a, if you haven't listened to ideas that parents and children are most difficult classroom, it's available in the bookstore online from the Foundation at A Course in Miracles, and I could not recommend it more highly. Nor could I recommend more highly just really beginning to pay attention to your thoughts and feelings and projections in your relationship with your children and parents, and you know, just really making that a classroom, and cultivating this relationship with our inner teacher to learn to heal our minds, because it's such a great opportunity in these two very, very pivotal relationships. And then just the other thing would be that, I told you, Sia, I'm going to Temecula to the Foundation for the March Academy class that'll be taught by staff that's coming up the 15th. Well, I'm leaving on the 15th, so it's the 16th through the 20th, I believe. But so there's still, the Foundation is still giving wonderful workshops and classes, and all the information about that is available online. And that, they are also doing a sale right now, I believe, that's 20% off. I just got an email on all of the Jesus-related CD sets from Ken's workshops. So I have a half of those, but I'm looking forward to buy some more when I'm out there. But again, you know, the resource at the Foundation website is amazing, and there's also a lot of free information. The questions and answers on that site are just continue to just, you know, astonish me with their clarity, and how many, you know, how they address just about every subject the ego can come up with beautifully and kindly, and are so comforting and helpful in our journey. So there's a wealth of information there. Oh, and there's a new book as well, a collection of Ken's essays from the Lighthouse, from his newsletter that he wrote in for I don't know how many years, but it's also there's some writing, I think an introduction from Gloria in it, and I'm not, you know, there's information about that at their website as well, on their from their bookstore and on their announcements page. So there's lots of things happening at the Foundation, and you know, it's the best resource out there.
It really is. And what Susan is talking about is the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which you can find at www.facim.org. And you can also find information on Susan's website, which is www.forays.inforgiveness.com. And I'll post that in the chat room. I'll post both of them. And because those are two websites you just really need to be familiar with. So, Susan, thank you so much for being here today. I hope you have a great time in Temecula.
Thank you, CA. I so appreciate it.
Oh, it's just been wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for the workshop. I want you to know it truly was very important. I felt a real lifting off of my shoulders from going to that workshop. It was really, it was very good. And I so appreciate that opportunity.
That's lovely. Thank you.
All right. And I'd like to say thanks to all of our listeners today and to everybody in the chat room who participated that way. Thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And I hope you'll keep it tuned to 12radio.com, where today we have a lot of great shows coming up, including The Throughline with Christine Dumaurier coming up next on Fabulous Fridays. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, with my guest, Susan Dugan, here on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality and about your parents and your kids.